This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where I have a very special guest today from France, Christian Toussaint, who became interested in the study of the Zapruder film and the JFK photography. Christian, give us a little background about how you became drawn into research on the assassination of our 35th president.
Well, I assume like most of the old guard, from day one, I was 8 years old, I was in Africa, and struck me was the reaction of the adult people. The first time I was in privileged surroundings, you know, not the typical African way of life that you might think about. And seeing all the people react that way, this struck a chord in me, and I got interested in the story, and I never stopped actually.
That's wonderful. So really, since a child, you have been a student of JFK.
Yeah, not an obsession, but I felt it was something important, and I knew after just a few books, a few articles, that there was something wrong with that. And the book by I don't know, that's a French journalist called Oswald Lefer.
Oh yeah,
got me hooked because it was a simple presentation, just looking at the case, just like a normal criminal case, and say yes. It just doesn't hold up.
That's right. That's right. There was nothing normal about this, including, for example, that by law, the autopsy had to be conducted in Dallas. And yet the Secret Service stole the body from Parkland Hospital and rushed it off to Washington, where it was under military control. That's one of the key aspects to understanding what actually happened here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They took hold of the body, they took all of the evidence, and actually, what I found just actually simply confirm what has been already discovered and understood and presented by a lot of other researchers. The only difference is there's a shock value in seeing the things now. We all suspected there was a shooter on the north. There is a shooter on the north. We all suspected that the autopsy pictures were faked. They are faked. We can see it now. But it has been detected a long time ago.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Now, Christian, I know you've done a lot of work on photographs and frames from the film and so forth. So shall we begin with an
sure.
explanation of your
sure.
methodology?
Okay. Basically, the methodology was designed as a thought experiment. I was trying to solve what we call in market research the weak signal problem, which is data that you have collected, but that you miss when you analyze your whole set of data. So since I was totally new to the trade and without any expertise in data processing, it was just a thought experiment. How would it be possible to solve this problem, which is recurrent and which really, really bothersome? So in 1992, I developed a conceptual approach which could theoretically solve this problem. In 1995, I wrote it down, but with modalities which would be acceptable for me because I had no expertise in data processing. I bought my first PC in 1998, to tell you. Okay, so I developed a very simple, very linear method to apply this concept. And at the same time, I was writing it down, I realized that it would theoretically be also a very powerful tool to enhance image. And that's how I got into it. See, since I always wanted to try it on the JFK assassination record and film, I'd say, okay, let's do it. If it works, you should be working on there.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Well, let's take a look at one of the first photographs or images you analyze here and tell us a bit about it.
Okay, that's the Black Dog Man artifact from the Benzner picture. That's a classic Black Dog Man picture. I chose it because I knew I had to establish that the process was operative on an undisputed picture. So it has been studied. It is not disputed. It has been analyzed by the IHCA experts, and they have found out that it is actually somebody in dark clothing. Okay, that is what, that was their finding. Okay, so if my process was working as designed, it should be able to get at least the same result, to find in this image, the original image, the image of somebody in dark clothing. And actually, it went one better. The dark clothing is a dark uniform. As you
so
can
is,
see
is he sighting in his rifle? Is that what we see there in the?
Yep. On the right, you see the processed image. It's a close up of the image with the original image is on the left, and this is a close up, an enlargement, and with the background exercise, you still see the classic Black Dog Man shape on the right, which is absolutely optically impossible because all the rest of the image has been altered by the process, except for this shape. So this is, once again, an indication of forgery. The Black Dog Man shape is an alteration which was put upon the picture to hide the image of the officer that we see now.
Fascinating. I think I see, you know, his hand on the rifle. And
yes.
And the scope that through which he's sighting there.
I don't know if it's holding a weapon to fire a president. My opinion, that's personal, because there is some blurriness anyway in the picture, so you have to make some extrapolation. For me, I don't believe that this guy has shot at the president because the position is much too exposed. I believe that this guy, and actually there are three of them. Yes, there are three Black Dog Men, and we will see them. Are just staying there to act as a cover, decoy for the shooter and an accomplice, which are located just behind the fence. We'll see that later on.
Just in general, how many shooting locations have you identified in your research?
Okay, I've found three of them with three shooters that we will see, but seeing now the wounds, I believe now that the frontal entry wound that we'll see also later on, I don't think that it could come from the grassy knoll. I think the angle and the elevation are not right, but of course I'm not an expert, and maybe it's somebody else looking at the, because now we see the entry and the exit wound, as we'll see. So we have an idea of the trajectory, and it's, I think, more frontal and more horizontal than what I used to believe until I check it out.
Well, this will be fascinating. I've identified shooters at six different locations, but that's not including Black Dog Man. Mm. And you're actually suggesting he was more of a camouflage or decoy than an actual shooter. I have identified a shooter at the intersection of the picket fence and the triple underpass, where there's an above ground sewer opening that I believe fired the shot that entered the right temple.
Okay. Yeah, you may be right, because actually, as we'll see, the entry wound is approximately here. It's actually very close to where Kilduff pointed his finger, as we'll see. So the entry is here, and the exit is here. So, as compared to the grassy knoll, now I've concluded the frontal should come from maybe the triple underpass or in that.
Yeah, somewhere in the vicinity of where I was suggesting. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Very, very good. This is fascinating stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, the very dark area that doesn't change indicates that they imposed a black patch or forth in order to distort the image. So it couldn't be analyzed this way.
Okay, what they did, they whited out the left part and they blacked out the right part. And this actually, since the human eyes utilize light and shadow, you know, to create perspective, this is it. They just destroy the image like that. They've done it several times, as we'll see.
Very, very good. So, shall we move to the next slide?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, that's the same Belsner isolated. I just written what I just said. I actually said that this is the black form on the right is just proof of tampering with that. If this is optically impossible in the first place, and after processing, it should have been altered by the process, which is not the case. This is not part of the genuine original picture, period.
So just to recap, the whiteness of the face has been whited out, so you can't yep. identify. And, of course, the blackness in addition. There aren't two persons here. They're just blacking out the back of the single person, or are you suggesting there's more than one person here?
There's just one person. I don't know if you see what I point. No, you don't. Okay, there's just one person here, really. We see the face, which is on the left, which is white, because they didn't use the same process that they use on the Black Dog Man artifact. But there's only one person. We are seeing him almost full frontal, actually. With his head slightly bent down.
His face would be almost full frontal if we could actually see it.
Yep. And on the right, in the Black Dog Man pattern, you can see that this is optically impossible because the dark area goes way over the limit of the face, of the contour of the face. Okay, you have a shadow which is actually existing, manifesting itself in mid-air, just above the guy's shoulder. This is, of course, impossible.
Wonderful. Would this kind of alteration be very simple to impose?
Yes, I would believe so, because we're looking at 60s, early 60s state-of-the-art technology. Okay, so by today's standards, it's actually almost laughable. But it worked, didn't it?
Yes. Shall we go to the next slide?
Yep. All right, so this is just a sequence to see how the process actually simply an iterative process. It's just a feedback loop, just where you reduce uncertainty. In this case, we're speaking about blur in optical terms. So you just reduce this uncertainty by simply cross-checking iteration that you have derived from the same source. This is basically what it is, a feedback loop. And the more you do this, the data simply clean itself. The objective information will have a tendency to manifest itself more frequently, more coherently than noise will. That's as simple as that. So you derive, you make iteration, you cross-check them, and the information that stays, this is objectively true of information. The noise is washed away.
So we're talking about a software program that performs repeated iterations. So you have the original on the left, the third in the middle, and then the 246th on the right.
Correct. And see how very early version 3. Okay, you already see much more than the original. But when you look at the number 246, see. That all the we see actually is present in the original, only it is much more blurred. It is degraded, but it is there. And if you look also you'll see that the version 246 is smaller because the blur has been severely reduced.
Fascinating.
Contrast.
Fascinating. I love it. Let's look at the next.
Sure. Okay, so when I found that the process was operative and functioned using the Belsner picture, I needed a cross-check once again. So I choose another picture of Black Dog Man in Willis 5, and look at the result. We find the same person wearing the same kind of uniform. We even can see the light reflection on the metallic insignia in the front of cap. But if we compare to Belzer, same clothing, same person, same location. Again, the man in dark blue uniform, which I conclude is, by the contextual evidence, must be a Dallas police uniform. We'll see those guys everywhere.
So you think Black Dog Man was actually in a Dallas police uniform?
Yes.
As the man identified by Gary Mack and Jack White as Badge Man was in a Dallas police uniform.
Yeah, but the judgment from Jack Wade and Gary Mack is a misinterpretation. It's actually, and it's very interesting because that actually bothered me. And I, sorry, Jack passed away, but I wanted to get back to him because to ask him that I, this is quite strange that the image they thought they found is wrong. It's a misinterpretation, but you'll see. I found a very similar image behind the fence. And this is strange. There is the same thing. An accomplice, a man standing by, and a shooter.
Fascinating.
And the fact that Gary Mack was with Jack at the origin of this fine, later on became a supporter of the official version, really makes me wonder. I'm sorry, he's deceased. Not, I don't like to.
Right. But, he recently retired. But
I am thinking, okay, was it a clever way to, you know, send disinformation? Because there are two people shooting at Kennedy on the wall, but the location and the image, which is now so famous, is a misinterpretation, and I'm wondering whether it was done on purpose to send all these social stories for decades and decades with that.
Fascinating. Of course, he underwent a transformation when he was hired to be the curator of the Sixth Floor Museum from a conspiracy theorist to one who was an apologist for the Warren Commission, basically. Mm-hmm. And they liked his manner. You know, they liked his demeanor. He came across as a serious, substantial person, which made him more credible and therefore far more valuable in perpetuating the myth.
Yeah, but I'm suspicious of this aspect of the story in a way.
Yes. Let's go to the next.
Yep. All right, so this is shown to to illustrate once again how the process is simply an iterative process. See, it's cleaning up the image. On the left, you have an intermediate result from Hughes film number 2, showing the snipper's nest. And you can see that we see a general silhouette with dark area. We can see that even at this stage that this is not Liarvé Oswald. But on the right, you have a much more evolved result. I think it's in November 2012. This one was 2008, if I recall. And you'll see how the image evolved and gets better all the time, which, if we need to demonstrate again, just doesn't and can't happen with an optical illusion. The more you produce, the more you get in finer detail with an optical illusion, well, it just fades out. This is not the case here.
Is there a yellow asterisk right there?
It was my marking.
On the left, about three quarters in and about, 10-15% down. Is that where it is?
On the image on the right, there is a yellow asterisk just above the guy.
No, I see that. It's very conspicuous. But is there a counterpart on the left or not?
No.
Okay. Let's go to the next slide.
Sure. Okay, we're going to go to Snipper's Nest.
Okay, you're talking about in the book, Depository, the official location of the shooter.
So this is the image that I think answers many of the still pending questions about the case. Here we have the guy, which is, I think that's a few seconds before the first shot. I believe the JFK limousine is turning into M Street, and so that's from the Hughes films, of course. I downloaded 3 frames from the JFK Land Society when I wanted to analyze this specific spot, and this is frame number 2. Here we can see several things. First, we can see that what we don't see a 24-year-old white Caucasian male with a receding hairline and wearing a medium dark shirt, largely open on a white T-shirt. This we don't see. What we see, once again, is a man wearing a dark blue uniform, also wearing dark glasses, if you can see that, holding some kind of object and apparently crouching in a firing position. That's the first thing. So here we have one answer. Oswald was not even in the snipper's nest during the shooting. This is evidence of it. And if somebody did shoot from this window, as 2 official commissions concluded, it was this guy wearing a Dallas police uniform. Second information, which is, I think, important, in the background, you see in the lower right corner of the window, to the guy's right, you see a box. If you look just above, you see another box, but this one is tilted. So since I don't know how a physical object can stand suspended in midair without physical intervention applied to them, this means that there's somebody else moving a box in the background. So there are at least two people on that floor, and actually there are more.
And do you see any evidence of a rifle?
No, there's an object that the guy is holding. Due to the angle, we can't tell right here on this image that he's holding a rifle. No, so I'm not saying it. In other image, which are less clear, unfortunately, you can extrapolate that this probably is some kind of weapon. But on this picture, you can't tell. But as you know, there is no record of officially of a Dallas police officer in this location 3 seconds before the assassination of JFK. So this is quite suspect.
My collaborative research has suggested no shots were fired from that location.
I have no idea. That's possible. I'm just seeing a guy there.
Right. Let's go to the next slide.
Sure. Okay, that's a different iteration, a different version of the same image. What I do when I work on a picture, that since it's iterative, I build up large files with different versions, which allows to verify that however you put your settings, the objective information remains, the core information remains. You can see that it's a different version, but the image remains the same.
Fascinating. Let's look at the next.
Okay, so that's UX frame number 3 from Lancer. Now you see here the random aspect of the method. This is the same lot from the previous frame, but the result I got was much less raw, less fine. It's quite coarse actually, so I had to cut up the background. But you see, of course, once again, you can still see the same image. You can see still the same guy. You see the dark clothing, you can see the shape of the cap, the police hat, and everything.
Is the white area actually the open window?
Yes, it's a cutout. I cut out, excised some of the background to make, since the image was much less precise, it was easy to see it that way. I don't like to color image, so that's
right.
I kept a few things.
Right. Let's look at the next.
Sure. Okay, so I did this as an online experiment where I was presenting this methodology on the JFK assassination forum, just to show that one, it was the process was easy to use and the result were easy to reproduce, and two, that regardless of the source material, the result would be coherent. Like the image I used, it was from a GIF by a respected church, Robin Hunger. I took just a frame from a small animated GIF that he had posted, and I worked on it. It was very low. You can see on the left, it's very low quality. But nevertheless, in just a few days, because that's just a real-time experiment I was doing, just to show that look at what is possible to have in just a few days, we start with this. We can have that. We already see the silhouette of the guy. We can see the specific shape of the cap. Even if the rest is blurry, you already find out the basic detail that you will find in the fully processed version and in a better quality source material.
During an extended discussion thread on the education forum, I asked Robin Unger to impose the replacement windshield that the Secret Service produced, which had the crack configuration, over the limousine windshield in the Alchins, which has a small white spiral nebula in the windshield where JFK's left ear would be if his left ear were visible, and he refused to do it, which was the first time I had serious doubts about Robin Unger. So I just mentioned that in passing. I do not believe he is quite the honest broker he would like to present himself as being. And we had further discussions about the man in the doorway in the Alchin 6, and Unger was similarly in my opinion, uncooperative or obfuscating. So, you know, I have a rather strong impression about him.
Well, I don't know. I accept that people can have difference of opinion.
It's not a question of difference of opinion. He's very skilled and agile in photographic analysis and manipulation. Mm. And I asked him to perform a very simple task, which would show that the crack in the windshield, the one the Secret Service would produce, was not at the same location as a small spiral nebula in the original photograph. And his refusal to do that was indicative to me that he had an agenda other than seeking to assist in the objective study of the assassination. I don't ask you to make any comment, Christian.
Yes, I'll make one comment anyway, because I had the occasion to exchange with him, and I asked him, I need some material, actually, I wanted to work with, and he didn't send it to me anyway, and he made clear that which I can accept, that he didn't believe in what I was trying to present. So this I can accept, but I would have appreciated that he had sent me the image I was looking for. But anyway, but I'll be interested in working on the what you just mentioned, the spiral, the white spiral in the windshield.
Yeah, good. All right. I would interpret your experience with him as confirming my experience with him. That is my opinion.
All right. Okay. So, this is the weather. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay. That's a weather picture. Okay. This one also I got into, actually, when I was presenting this stuff on the JFK Association forum. One guy mentioned it, and I never heard of this picture. He said that the picture was taken, I think the consensus is 3 minutes before, the first shot. And it shows, as you can see, the sniper's nest and the open window and everything. So he said
Nest being at the top right.
Yeah, top right, sorry.
And several figures right below it in the window below it.
Suppose there are two people at least are supposed to be in the, that's another problem. The presence of the two black people in the
right. Junior Jarman, I think, was one of them. Eaten a couple of chicken wings that were later suggested that Lee Oswald had consumed, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're going to shoot someone, the last thing you want is anything greasy on your fingers, and you can't eat chicken wings without getting something greasy on your fingers. So that was a non-starter from the beginning.
Yeah, that's a silly conspiracy theory for one. Okay, what I think interesting in the German and the other guy story is now that we will see the pictures showing the policemen over there. Now I understand better their reaction, which has always puzzled me. That those they claim they heard firing just above their head. They didn't move, and the picture showed them looking in the direction of the grassy knoll. And so my conclusion now after this research is maybe those guys knew that it was the police up there, and so the police was just shooting back. So which explained their reaction, which I couldn't explain. So that's
well,
what I'm
I know. I know of no shots that were fired in response to the shooters who were killing JFK. I know of no shot having been taken in his defense.
No. What I'm saying that those guys, if they knew for some reason, because there are at least 3-4 people on the sixth floor wearing the uniform. So this makes noise, and Jarman and the other guys say, okay, we heard them. We heard the firing. We heard the hull falling on the floor.
Right.
So if they didn't react, it's because they thought, I believe now, they thought that it was somebody bona fide, you know, legitimate shooting back. What they thought. Yeah. I'm not saying that somebody.
So somebody could have been there working a bolt mechanism to eject already spent casings.
It's possible. Also, it's also possible that somebody was actually shooting from there. It's also possible.
Let's take a look at the next.
Yep. So what we'll see next, it's an first result on the sniper's nest window. You won't see much here. So that's why I put the asterisk, just to show once again how this is an evolving process. So we didn't see much on the original. This we see some pattern. We see, okay, not too clear. We can see the next one, which is, I believe, a it's a recent result. Yeah, okay. Here we see more detail. It's not as clear as the UX frame 2. But once again, you can see somebody with a specific shape of a cap, hat on his head, and dark clothing. We see a face clearly. You can see nose, mouth. I don't know about the ear. The ear.
Where is the cap, Christian? Where would I find it?
Just below the yellow asterisk. Just below the yellow asterisk, you'll see the guy. It's not. This is included just to show that. Something which is true, in a time sequence. So I just wanted to verify. If I had only found, just the pictures of the guys and sleepers during the shooting, I could have been, well, but no. It is 3 minutes before, the shooting, and we have, as we will see, up to 1 minute, after the shooting has ended, we will see pictures of, Dallas police officer in the sleeper's nest. We'll see why there is no mystery in the Powell picture. You know, remember the moving box mystery? There is no such mystery. We'll see why.
Let's go to the next slide.
Sure. Okay, this is a composite, I believe, of the weather picture. Okay, just to see how it evolved, this, and the last one. Okay, we can skip that because there's not much to see in the weather picture. Just confirm what we already know. Okay, here we have a triple composite of the guy in the sleeper's nest. You have first on the left the UX frame, which I believe the best image I've got from him on the UX frame 2. UX frame 2 is on the left. On the right is UX frame 3 from Robin Hunger's low quality frame that I downloaded as an online experiment. It's low quality, but yet again, you can see already the typical shape of the cap, police hat, the dark clothing, and the face. We'll see this everywhere. And, okay, the weather, this a bit more clearer version of the weather picture. You'll see the shape a bit more better because you can see the contour of the shape a bit more.
Go forward, yeah.
So you here you have three images of this guy from three different sources. Just to answer in advance, it's the source material. No. Three different sources. Okay, so that's a quadruple composite of the sniper's nest. Same guy, UX2, the best one. UX3, low quality, the weather. And this one, the fourth one, this is the Dillard picture. So that's a new one. Dillard, remember the Dillard picture with the black FBI arrow? Remember that picture? We will see it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a picture with a black arrow which points to nothing, and we'll see later on where what is the arrow pointing to, and it's very, very interesting because it shows definite confirmation by the FBI because actually, as we'll see, the arrow points to somebody, and we'll see it later on because I discovered it just 2 months ago.
I think because of your vast experience with this, you can make out the images far more effortlessly than can I, because, you know, I'm still not clear about what images I'm seeing, you know, what features I'm seeing in different images.
Okay, here just seeing the windows. That's okay, but you use or no?
No, go ahead. Yeah, I'm looking at the Dillard in particular. That's
all. Dillard, okay. Dillard, this is not the full, you see the right, part of the window, and just the asterisk is just above the head of a guy, which is, we see the head and the face, more precise.
And of course, the asterisk is in the same relative location in all of the images.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Can we go to the next? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay, so this is UX2 and UX3, just put to illustrate that we see that the man has moved and the boxes have moved in the background, which once again demonstrate that it's not any kind of optical illusion. Optical illusion do not move coherently along a timeline. It's rather hard to see in a PowerPoint presentation, but it's clear enough on a wide screen. You see here on the left, on the UX2, on the left, the man is looking to the left in direction almost of the grassy knoll. In the less low quality on the right from Robin Hunger, we can see the man is looking to the right, and we accurately you spoke about a weapon. You can see a dark straight line extending from his cheekbone in direction and pointed downward in direction of the street. The image is not clear enough to be affirmative that say, okay, this is a weapon, but it's very suggestive of it.
Very good. Let's look at the next.
Sure. Okay, this is just to show that there are actually more than one guy. We saw that books have moved. I don't see that in a PowerPoint format you'll see much of in that because it's just shade of blue. The white asterisk is just above the head of a policeman, which is located 1-2, the second widow left of the sniper's nest. You won't see much, I believe, on your PowerPoint like we're doing now. It's a all different shade of blue, but you can make out very simply on the white screen the silhouette and once again the shape of the police hat. You see a hand, actually, you see a pink blob, which is his hand. Apparently, he's holding something, but probably a weapon.
So right below the white asterisk is the hat of the police.
Yep. You see why?
Well, yeah, I see that. It looks like he's got glasses on.
Yes, he would. Yeah. You're getting used to the picture. Actually, there is a difficulty because these are quite different from usual conventional image enhancements.
Yeah,
just like when you look at X-rays, the information is there, but you don't see the bone, you should be, but information is correct. The difficulty when you approach this research, you have to get used to it, but you get the light. Yes, he's wearing glasses visibly. The light distribution on the eye is different.
Next slide.
Yep. Okay, we'll move to the retaining wall.
Next.
Yep. Okay, now we'll have some explaining to do. Okay, so use what is the indication there for further analysis that we will do. Okay, so there were three Black Dog men. So I think this is new information. It's not crucial to the fact, but anyway, it's good that we clear this point.
You mean to say there were three different persons who have been identified as being Black Dog men, or that there were three persons who were dressed in police uniforms that resemble one another enough to be thought of as three different Black Dog men?
Exactly. The three Black Dog men are three men wearing Dallas police uniform located as indicated. Number one, near the steps. Number two, inside the corner of the retaining wall. And number three, about, I'd say, 10 feet, 15 feet from the corner. It is those guys that are seen in different pictures and films.
Next.
Sure. Okay, that's Black Dog Man 1, as seen in Moorman, the guy which is close to the steps. Okay,
He's the most familiar of the figures identified as Black Dog Man, yes.
No, I don't think so, because I don't think that it has been identified as Black Dog Man yet. The Black Dog Man identified, as I recall, was Belsner, Willis.
And the Bester. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But in Moorman, no. And I think it's close to this location. I think, yes, just at the corner of the wall that we find the Badger, Jack White's and the Gary Black Dog Man. Badge Man, sorry. Okay, this has never been noticed, but it's there actually. When you know where to look, you even in the unprocessed original image, you notice there is something there.
Yeah, fascinating. Next.
Yep. Okay, this is the same guy from the frame. Actually, the counting is mine. I downloaded the best quality Nix film I could found, and I screen capture about 30-35 frame. So this is one of them, Nix 29, and you see the same guy. You see the black rectangle of the extremity of the wall, and you see the guy is seen as a silhouette. The image look a bit like an X-ray or something, but you see once again the silhouette of somebody there, and also the familiar shape of the police hat. This is not the best image, but it's shown for the sake of continuity, just to illustrate that when somebody is there, you'll find it everywhere. And as we'll see, we have a composite where there are five or six images of this guy just taken from the next film.
Fascinating. Next.
Sure. Okay, this is the guy from Moorman. We can skip that. I just wanted to have it isolated. You can see there are a lot of details. We'll see it later on, a crop up of this guy's face. I wonder whether a face recognition software wouldn't be useful in that case.
Is he also wearing dark glasses?
I don't know. This may be simply the shadow. I'm not sure about this guy wearing glasses. It could be just shadow because of the cap. I don't know. But you can see a hand on the near the extremity, the corner of the wall. You can see his, with his hand. I think we see it on the left, so it's the right hand. And he might be holding on the other with the arm, maybe something, an object. Could be a weapon, would you, like you know, in the military, when you have your weapon along your arm, it could be in this position. This guy, of course, that's why I say those guy was just too clear, too near, in my opinion, to be shooters. On the other hand, they are perfectly located to cover for assassins in the background.
Next,
sure. Okay, that's a close-up of the guy. I just posted this one because one of the guys say, okay, but this all are optical illusion. Okay, look and tell me if you think this is an optical illusion. This is, if you look at the location that we have been enlarged from the moon picture to get that, there is no way we could have an optical illusion with so many details. You can see the mouth. I'm sure that with some face recognition software, maybe we could get a clue about who this guy is, actually.
Really? You think face recognition could be applied to this?
Yes, I think so. In some cases, same goes for the guys in the Ukraine, the guys in the sniper's nest. And you get carried away at times, looking at pictures. And I say, okay, this guy, but it looked like a bit like, you know, the guys, they found the thumbprint, on one of the books, the guy from LBJ. I thought the guy at times, in some iterations, looked like Malcolm Wallace. Yeah. Okay. I think the guy in the Hughes frames look a bit like Malcolm Wallace. So, yeah. Yeah, I'd be interested.
In which frame? In the next frame?
No. In the Hughes frame 2 that we've seen, or we've already seen.
Where would that place him?
Sorry?
Where would that place him? What location then?
In the sniper's nest.
So okay, good. Yeah. I hypothesized that Mac Wallace was in the book depository, but on the opposite side.
Could be.
Firing at John Connolly.
That's possible. Just extrapolation. I don't believe that with the method is quite powerful, but I've been asked at time to work on Oswald in the doorway, on the backyard pictures, and I don't think that that's the kind of the thing that can be done with efficiency with the process. There is a margin of error. I don't think that you can be definitive about the identity of somebody.
Sure.
That's my opinion. So just everything just put it in.
Sure. Next.
Yep. Okay, that's a composite from the Nix film only. So I was, of course, I made a mistake, of course, in the sequence. So it's good. The sequence is 12 on the left, 26 on the right, 20 in the top middle, 22 right corner.
Oh yes.
Down and the last one. And you see, if I've done that correctly, you'll see, you know, just like a moving picture. You see the guy, okay, standing at the corner, is okay, moving in. On iteration 20 is full back fronting the camera, and then you see it bending over and then starting to raise up a bit in 29. So what this show is that it's not possible to produce cleaned up version of all the films of the assassination. So we could see what I'm showing here quite clumsily in a fixed frame can be done, and we could be looking at a motion picture showing this guy moving around the corner of the extending wall, and this can be done for all the films of the assassination. Same things can be done with the Hughes film from with the Zapruder film too.
Let's go to the next.
Yep. Okay, that's the guy from Moorman compared to the guy from Nix. Well, these are different versions, just to say, okay, same guy, same location, same clothing. Okay, you can even see a light reflection on the metallic insignia in the front of cap in the next picture on the right. The white rectangle, that's light on the metallic insignia on the cap. Okay, we can see the next one. Okay, that's BDM1 still, NYX 22. It's a bigger version. We've seen it in the composite. You can see that's the more look normal looking image of all I got from NYX. It's almost like a normal. It's almost like a normal image enhancement. It's a bit blurry, unfortunately, but you can see the shape of the cap. You see, I have a red X below. You see the cap. Below the cap, you see the face. You see the chin, the nose, and mouth are quite visible. Even the ear, you can see that it is bent over. We see the shoulders and everything. I was just even thinking, wondering whether he was wearing a armband on the arm. That's the right arm that we see on the left. But I think that's just an artifact.
Okay, let's go to the next one.
Okay, so this is a BDM Black Dogman number 3. As seen in the Benzner. This is interesting because on the left we have the original Benzner with the Black Dogman artifact, the classic Black Dogman. I've put a marker with one to indicate an artifact that we use as a reference point on the for the picture on the right. You see the marker one on the in the picture on the left. You see the marker one in the picture on the right. Okay. Now, to the right of the marker, there is an artifact with a white asterisk. You see it?
Sure.
Okay. This is Black Dogman number 3. This is a third guy wearing a police uniform. You see once again the classic signature shape of the police hat, the dark uniform, and the face. And if you go back to the original image on the left, now that you know where to look, you'll see him. You'll see the guy. You'll see the artifact just close to the marker. Now that you know where to look.
Yes.
Okay? This is
did you do anything with Zapruder and Zeitzman on the low colonnade?
No, I didn't. I worked on the picket fence corner in Zapruder, essentially, and some frame showing the Z-337 showing the headwood in the back of the head.
Okay. Next.
Sure. Okay, that's BDM2, Black Dogman number 2, which is the same guy as we see in Benzner, the classic Black Dogman, only this is from Willis 5. Once again, this is a different iteration. It's interesting to see that we can have all sort of different rendition. This one look like a bit like a pop painting. We'll see a different version later on. And once again, which is what is important to understand that the information which is carried along the different iteration it is true. It is not true. It is going away. It is washed away. So, okay, we can skip this one.
Next. Yeah.
Okay. Same different version. You see once again, very preeminently, you can see the, again, light distribution of the metallic insignia. This is a signature, when you're looking at a picture which is not very, clear. I did some job working, taking pictures of the Dallas policemen, blurring them and see, okay, what would they look like? What
are
would
those his eyes almost in the middle of the picture?
Sorry?
His eyes almost in the middle of the picture?
Yes, his eyes just above the rim of the cap. You can see the eyes just above, very prominent. You can use as a reference point the white spots, you know, which is the sunlight on the metallic insignia on the cap. You can see this is a very clear image. Well, all things equal. You can see eyes, nose, mouth, chin, everything, and even the ear. That's quite clear.
Next.
One? Sure. Okay, this composite showing the guy from the Willis 5, a different version, once again, just to show that whatever settings you put, you'll get the information back because it is truly objective. It is different version, but still there. Yet another version from the guy from NYX 12, again, just correlating image. These are the same guys, same clothing, and this clothing is Dallas Police uniform. Next. Okay, this is just a recap. Okay, three different versions. We have different sources processed at different time. See just the correlation, the same image, a guy, dark clothing, a special a cap, a police hat, I don't know what you call that. You can see once again light very clearly in Willis 5 on the insignia. You see different version, very blurry, but once again just to show I can For each picture I have analyzed, I have several hundred of pictures which can show how you evolve by step by step. You go clearer and clearer. Okay, we can skip that. Just a recap. Say, okay, just to get image. Yeah, next one. Okay, same thing. BDM, that's classic from Belzer. This BDM2, BDM3 in the middle. That's from Belzner also, and BDM3 this time from Nix. This time from Nix, and it's we will go back to this because this guy appeared in Nix in the Nix film, where there is at the same spot where there is, you know, the whitish rectangle, just close to the famous shooter in a white shirt, if you remember that. Also, if you don't, we'll see the original Nix film.
In the Nix 16, is that the face to the left of the white asterisk slightly above?
No, the face is just below the asterisk. You see the blue area of the cap?
Oh, yeah.
The face is just below. And if you've got good eyes, you'll see something here maybe. You see, I'm working on it, but I'm quite sure that that's
it. You it looks see like it could be the face of someone in the background.
No, well, I think that's something whitish or and vertical and maybe transparent, and I think that's maybe the Coke bottle. And I think that you remember the Coke bottle?
Coke bottle, yeah. No, I see the Coke bottle is in the foreground there, is it not?
Yeah, it's let me see. It's on the left.
Right. It's on the left front in the foreground. I mean, if you just took the corner, carved out, you know, like 1/10 of this image, it would be right there on the right.
Okay. It's, okay. So that's my opinion. The object is whitish or transparent, translucent, whatever. It's close to the guy. It seems that the guy is actually holding the object, and it's in the location where the Coke bottle was photographed in other pictures after the shooting. I guess I could be wrong, of course. Could be something else. But let's forget. If I had sent you other pictures, we can see in other pictures in larger and different versions that the guy is holding an object on his right. If you see an object with a shade of blue, which is different than his uniform. And from other pictures that I, unfortunately, I didn't send you, there were many pictures already. It can be postulated that this could be some kind of communication device, like a radio, walkie-talkie or something. On the right.
Okay.
Okay. Next one.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. This is from this Nix film, this Nix 16, and this is just shown here because one critic told me, and he was right. Say, okay, but how come that we can't see all those guys together? Okay. One of the difficulties when you work, when the process operates, just like when you focus with a photograph, you know, camera. Okay, so what you gain in one spot, you're losing on the other. So that's why. But I was speak. So I said, okay, let me see what I can do. And it's quite blurry, admittedly, but you can see, I believe, BDM number 3, the blue shape on the right. And on the left, by the extremity of the wall, I have indicated 1 and 2, which are BDM 1 and 2. But I don't think in the PowerPoint format you'll see much in that. Just for the record, if you look at that on a big wide screen, you can see that quite clearly. You can't see very clearly. You see clearly the two shapes. The guy near number one is actually at this point crouched. You only see the head and the top of the shoulders, while the other guy inside the corner of the wall is actually standing up. It's of course number 3 is much more easily visible.
Next.
Yep. Okay, we're going to the parking fence. Yeah, the fence behind. Okay, here I have so that we can know where we are. We did just disregard the indication about location of JFK's head on impact. This was approximative, and this has no meaning here. Okay, I have indicated the location where a shooter and an accomplice will be seen in further processing of this segment of the movement picture. This is an already processed picture, I must precise. I have indicated also the location of the black dog man, which if you have good observation skill, you may spot number two, which is quite visible. Number one, you won't, I believe. And number three, maybe it's a bit visible. But just to indicate your location, that we see the setup of the shooting, how we kill a president. So you have one, two, three guys who apparently serve as decoy and cover. Probably if you see people with a real rifle in this location, you won't be surprised. If somebody see agitation, you know, it's a good plan. It's a good plan. And when I checked, actually, I realized that most of assassination of head of states or of people of power has done this way. The people, the normally tasked to ensure the safety of the target are actually involved. That's Indira Gandhi, that's Sadat.
Yes.
You name it. That's Jules César. That's always the case. Always the case.
Rabin is a perfect example where they allowed the shooter to walk right in between the security detail to shoot him in the back of the head. And the Secret Service, there are more than 15 indications of the Secret Service setting him up. And what you're showing is that many persons wearing Dallas police uniforms were involved in the assassination.
Well, I'm telling you that all three teams of shooters that we will be seeing are wearing Dallas police uniform, period.
Wow.
When I understood that, I said, okay, but it's one thing to have one guy in the Dallas police uniform behind the fence. Okay, it could be. You don't have to you don't have to have a massive DPD implication. Okay, just one to maybe, but what we're seeing, this is impossible. We're talking about teams of people on the knoll. You had we've seen two. We will see two people, a shooter and an accomplice, but there are others. There's at least one over behind the fence, and probably more. And the three people on the behind the wall, and there are more. I found out not long ago one which has been erased in Algen's 8, which is quite some time after the fact. This guy has been erased because he's wearing a uniform. So yes, that's incredible. The assassination was carried out by people wearing Dallas police uniform. That's a fact.
Next slide.
Sure. Okay, this is a raw results from of the same segment I show you on a Mormon. Okay, instead it was A instead of 1 and X instead of 2. But 1 shows the accomplice and 2 shows the shooter. Probably you will have difficulty making everything here because this is the raw result and you have to get used to it. Okay, so we can skip. This is the same segment that was indicated in the picture. Okay, and now look just. Maybe you don't. Okay, let's look at the other one. Okay, same segment, different version. Okay, just to see how objective information is carried out. However you analyze the information, it will manifest itself coherently, while noise will not. This, you can do whatever you want. You will still have this picture, and it will get finer and finer the more you process it. Let's go to the second one. I don't know if I'm able to see to make out the shape of those guys, but it will be clearer with the next one, I assume.
Perfect. Next.
No, we'll skip this one because it's not as clear. This one is interesting. This is detailed. Okay, I have excised the background, and maybe it's easier for you to see.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Christian, we have to take a break. Is there a comment more you want to take about this? And then I'm going to give you free reign after, because we've gone through about 40 of 100 slides, and I want you to go through the rest after we come back from the break. Do you want to make a remark about this before we take the break?
No, that's okay. No, sure. No problem.
All right, then. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my special guest, Christian Toussaint, going through a new mode of photographic analysis related to the assassination of JFK. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Sure.
Hi, I'm Josh Steffler from Freedom Free For All Television. And with the media going completely corporately controlled in this day and age, we couldn't put shows on like this without the help of our independent media partners, MBC, Media Broadcasting Center. So if you like this show, check them out on WeBookYourShow.com, and you can find all sorts of different channels promoting liberty, freedom, and an independent press and an independent media. Thank you for watching.
We can now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Less than 3% of you people read books. But less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off and leave them off.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make, to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center. Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest from France, Christian Toussaint, who is going through a series of studies he's done of photographs and frames from the Dealey Plaza, the assassination of JFK. And because he has many, many more frames to cover, I want Christian to proceed at the pace he thinks is most appropriate and the emphasis he would like to provide. So, Christian, please proceed.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so what we're seeing now, we just seen before the break. So this is the team behind the fence. We can see, I indicated the top of the picket fence. I have excised the background, so you can see there's two people. You can see on the left a guy which I call the accomplice because he's not shooting. Appears to be looking straight away. And we can see on the right another guy, which, and we'll see in a bigger enlargement, which a guy which appeared to be the shooter on the knoll. We can skip that one and see the others, if you please. Okay, this is a close-up of the shooter itself, and so we have more details here. We can, of course, find the classic shape of the hat, police hat cap. We'll see also the white spot in the middle of the cap, as usual. That's the metallic insignia. And if you have good visual skill, you can notice that the guy is wearing goggles. Okay, and he appears to be holding some kind of a dark object, which I postulate is a weapon. Is a weapon of some kind. It's not clearly visible because it's seen almost frontally. So it appears very short, but I assume it could be a normal classic weapon. It could be equipped with a scope. There appears to be something in the middle of on top of this of his thing. I don't know. But anyway, the important thing is that the image is quite clear. You can notice that I've excised the background on, while letting space enough around the image not to make people say, okay, this is some kind of Japanese CISO game or anything. No, this is a real image. And remember, if we can't do it, but if you go back to the original unexcised image, you'll find this exact image. Okay. One point here, I'm sure I read somewhere in JFK literature that some guy said he saw a picture of the null assassin who was wearing goggles, and he specified that goggles like swimmers wear. And this is what we see here. And but I just can't remember where I read that. I believe it might be in Henry Hurt, reasonable doubt. If anybody has information about that, I'd like to hear about it, because I find it quite interesting that somebody, the journalist said he saw the picture quite early in the 60s. Quite early after the assassination, and he mentioned the goggles. And when I saw this picture, I said, okay, this guy saw the correct unretouched picture from Moman, and I'd like to verify that, but I can't find the quotation. Okay, let's see another one. I think this is going to be a colored version. Yeah, okay, just to show, here I've just added a light watercolor, meaning that all the details that are in the original picture are still visible here, just a light coloring. So I've put something roughly pink on to show the face, and blue for the uniform and some yellow for the metallic insignia. Okay, next one. Okay, this is a comparison of the two. The original on the left, the watercolor version on the right. Okay, you can see that the original is already clearly visible.
Christian, is there something like a K painted over the face in part? You know, it looks sort of like the image of a K, red on the right, black on the left.
Sorry, on the right, what was the question? Is there?
Well, it's like there's an image of a smear, a cover up, an ad, you know, to obfuscate the face in the form of what looks like a letter K.
I don't see that. On the right, it could be something.
On the right, it's black on the left.
Okay, on the right, it could be an artifact which came out when I put some watercolor. If it's not in the original, probably it's an artifact when I added the color.
Well, it's red, it's black on the left. I mean, it's there in both places. It's rather like a bulky letter K, you know, as best I can describe, right in the center almost. But that's okay. Go forward.
Okay, next one. Okay, so this is the second guy, what I call the accomplice. This is just to show the general silhouette, and we can... Okay, what is interesting, you look at the eye. I think you can visualize the face quite easily. You can see there is something peculiar with the eye. We can see actually, and we'll see better. The guy is wearing apparently some kind of eyewear, or maybe normal conventional eyewear. I don't know. We can go to the other one. Okay, this is an extreme close-up of the guy. Okay, once again, because I produced this because some people were saying. It's an optical illusion and so forth. Okay, you cannot get this kind of detail if it is an optical illusion, period, okay? Here, I have indicated just so that it's easier. You can see the eyewear. You can see the right here. And if you've done pictures outdoors, what you see in the right here tells you this is a real three-dimensional object because the outer rim of the ear on the left is pinker, is lighter in shade than the rest of the ear. That's what you get when you do, in certain lighting condition, when you do pictures outdoors. Okay? So this tell you if it was needed that we are not looking at any kind of optical illusion here. We're looking at some real three-dimensional objects. Somebody's head, this somebody's position just close to the corner of the picket fence behind, in the parking lot. If you look also at the mouth, maybe the enlargement is a bit too large. It has been, it has a tendency. He is actually smiling. You can see, the corner of the mouth curled up, which is, which I think is quite interesting because this guy is just looking at the head of JFK exploding and he's supposed to be some kind of law enforcement, officer if we are to believe his clothing. Okay. You can see the next one. Okay. Oh, this is from Zapruder. This is Z472, and we will find this picture again in the forgery segment. But this actually, the first thing. Okay, below the asterisk, what you see is a guy just close to the picket fence corner. This guy is the same guy. It's either the accomplice or the shooter. I would tend to believe it's the accomplice. But it's just extrapolation from my part. This segment of the picket fence is actually invisible in the original Zapruder film. There are two trees, one on the left and one on the right, which foliage extends over this area and cover it completely. So you see this when you have processed the image and you discover, as I did, that the both trees simply disappear. And when they disappear, this is what you see. This guy and other guys. Well, let's see another version of the same image. No, just one thing. Notice, yeah, but we'll see it here. That's okay. In both cases, notice how these new images that were invisible before are surrounded by a white aura, a semi-circular whitish area. That's the case for all the images in the Zapruder film in this area. All the images which have been rendered invisible, you will find this phenomenon. A whitish circular area just around the image which was previously invisible. My guess, what they did, they whited out those guys in each frame, and then, just like they did in Besner, they added white and gray, and they literally destroyed the image to the human eye. This is one of the favorite tactics that they have applied to forgery court. Next one. Okay, this is a comparison of Z472 on the right, we just seen it, with as compared to the guy in Mooman. Okay, we see apparently is a cap. We see dark clothing. We see the eyewear that we see in the Mooman on the left. We don't see on the right, but we don't. Maybe there is some slightly weird light distribution on the guy's eye. So maybe an indication that he's wearing something. But in anyway, it's not important. Look at the what is correlated between the two images: cap, dark clothing, and same location. Once again. Next one. Okay, this is a recap. Here we have on the top left, we have the original raw result where I first came to identify the two guys. On the right is the same image with the background excised. Down right, we have the shooter colored and original version. And on the left, we have a solo with background excised of the accomplice. Okay, next one. Okay, this is to show that, logically, this was to be expected, that those two guys captured in Mooman were also captured in the next film, actually. So the next film, I didn't have much time to work on it, so we just have intermediate result, but you can see, again, we will see different version of the next 29, which is a frame where I found those two guys. But once again, you see the same location, the same guys, the same kind of dark clothing, although in the Knicks we can't see much, we also see that it's dark. We can't see much more detail, but you have them, those two guys up. So I believe there are 3 to 5 seconds between the two pictures. So would explain here in Moorman is shooting, and in Knicks he has just pulled the rifle inside the fence. Over the fence, and he's apparently leaning to the left. He's in motion actually. The other guy, just like in Moorman, is apparently almost immobile. Okay, next one. Okay, this sort of recap. We have Moorman on the left, an enlargement, the shooter, colored and original, and two versions from the Z-47-2, showing once again the accomplice. Again, I don't see how you can escape the conclusion that those guys are wearing Dallas police uniform. Unless we know that there was a regiment, I don't know, Marines or I don't know. That's not the case. Okay, those guys are wearing Dallas police uniform. Are they bona fide DPD? I don't know. But even if they are not, I don't know. I don't understand how they could know that they would be able to get into those positions to shoot at Kennedy, and how they were sure that they could escape. No, you have to be sure. You have to know that nobody would be there where you have intend to position yourself to shoot. And you know,
Christian, the parking lot behind the picket fence was used by the Dallas Police Department. That was their parking lot.
I know that. Okay, next one. Okay, this is from Nick 29, just different version. This one I put a 3D setting to see if I could get a bit more information. It's quite blurry, but once again you see the shape, the silhouette of those two guys that we've seen in Moorman. Those two guys 3, 4 seconds, 5 seconds after the headshot. I'm feeling we can see the guy on the right, which is a shooter. Probably with more work, we should be able to see the weapon being, holding the weapon across his chest. That's my guess. Okay, next one. Okay, this is the triple composite from the fence accomplice. Okay, what I wanted to show here is that once again that you find this guy. This is correlating. I don't know how to tell it, but there is no argument for optical illusion, a randomly generated image of any kind. This is impossible. For each file, you have 100 of iteration, and now look at 3 different sources. Image taken at different time for different angles, but showing the same location. And what do you see? The same guy. Okay? Moorman, Z-47-2, Knicks 29. The same guy, same dark clothing, which is apparently the Dallas police uniform. Okay, next. Okay, that's Z-46-2. That's Zapruder. Okay. Notice once again the whitish semicircular area around the guy. You see the guy below the yellow asterisk?
Yeah.
Okay. See the whitish aura around him again? The whitish zone around the guy, the image. Okay. We'll find everywhere in Zapruder film where they have altered the film. Can we see the next one? I think it's the same with background excised. Okay, maybe it's more visible here. Here you can't see the whitish aura, but you can see more clearly the image of the guy. He appears to be looking straight ahead, so looking straight at Zapruder, which might explain what Zapruder said in his commission testimony. Okay, these are the same guys. Z-462 is on the left. In the middle, we have Moorman, and Z-472 is on the right. So between 462 and 472, I think it's half a second, roughly, I believe. That's it, because Zapruder ran, I believe, 18 image seconds. So it's roughly half a second. And we can see that the movement is coherent between, you can do that. You can go from 162 to how it did the man's, his position in 472 in half a second, actually. After I did, it's visible. So the movements are coherent. Once again, same clothing, same location, same guy. I don't know what the critics will say. about this research, but well, good luck. Okay, next one. Okay, this is a triple composite from the Z film only. Here we have Z462, 72, and 81 on the right. Okay, if you look, I don't know if it's clear in a PowerPoint format, but once again, notice the whitish some semi-circular area around the, each image. 481 is not very clear, but is still usable to point out that the guy is still there, so that's why it is included here. Again, you can see that the movement is coherent. We have 1 second between 462 and 481. We'll see that the movement of the man is coherent with human physiology and capabilities. Okay. There's no jumping. Okay. Okay. This is what you would expect from somebody, evidently quite somehow agitated, but, okay, this is normal, and this confirms that we can now easily produce cleaned up version of this film, showing this guy and others doing their stuff behind the fence. Okay, next one. Okay, Daltex, that will be quite short because there was only one picture to work with. Okay, this is the location, the red rectangle show the location of the Daltex the shooter team.
From which I believe three shots were fired with an unsilenced Mannlicher Carcano, the only unsilenced weapon used in the plaza that day.
That's possible. I don't know. We'll see what I found in the picture. Let's see. Next. I think it's an early result. Yeah. Okay. This is, the picture show, the red rectangle. Okay. So you see the magnification. So you won't see much here, just to indicate where the image will manifest themselves and where they will appear. Some people with good visual skills can visualize the guy on the left, which is, in this case, the accomplice. The shooter will be on the right. Next slide, if you please. Okay, this is the right part. You see the what will look like some sort of Mayan pyramid on the right of is where the shooter will materialize. A grayish area, which is in front of the image and which is hiding part of the image, is in fact the staircase outside. And the guy, I believe, is maybe leaning or lying on the staircase because it seems to be a bit larger when you see the image. It's bigger in scale than the guy, which is apparently the accomplice, which is behind the glass. So that's my analysis. Next slide. Okay. On the left, you have the guy, the accomplice, the guy which is on the left in the window. And on the right, you have the shooter. You will probably have difficulty seeing the shooter here because it's monochrome. It's only one color. But maybe it's easy to see the guy on the left, and we'll see other versions, and it will be maybe more visible. But the shooter, you see the shape, you see the same shape that we've seen in the right when we saw the earlier result, looked like a sort of truncated pyramid. This is now this area here, and the gray area here is the staircase out in front, outside. Next slide. Okay, this is a single crop of the guy, the accomplice on the left. The image is still quite blurry because the guy is behind the window, behind glass. And, it's a massive enlargement of a very, very tiny segment of the picture. But you can see, once again, the silhouette. You'll see in the close-up, you'll see the shapes of the cap and the usual visual details that we found along the way. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is the shooter. Maybe it's easier because it was highly contrasted. Let me explain. The asterisk is just above the guy cap. Okay, below the rim of the cap, and you'll find, if you just go down, you'll find the face, and the weapon is hard to see because it's just like in the Hughes, almost full frontal. So it's very, very short, but it's very visible. It has a dark blue color in other version. It's very visible. I don't know if you'll be able to visualize this image because Well, it's not easy. Let me tell you something more once again. This gray area here is a staircase, and in between the staircase you see part of the man's shoulders. And I did try to see if I could extract maybe something, because this looked like a shoulder patch. Just I'm indicating that so that you may maybe have a scale of how the image is to be looked at. It's not easy, this one. Okay, but I can tell you, and you can review that later on. There is actually a shooter there, and it's actually one of the most contrasted images. This is the Algent, so Algent was a professional, so the image is quite heavy in data. Okay, this is not the most spectacular, but it is there, and it is true. Okay, next one. Okay, here we have, maybe you see it better on the left, you have the accomplice, which is on the left. The guy is actually looking down. And on the right, you have another version. You see that I've tried to work on the shoulder and see if we could get something out of what I think might be some shoulder patch on the right. It's easier for you to visualize the guy. Maybe I don't know. Okay. But, this is not the best. The Daltex only one picture, and I refuse to work, on pictures, on single picture. I need to have corroboration, because you can always be fooled by, let's say an artifact. That's why I appreciate working with the Black Dogman pictures.
Question, would it work that you have, a succession of frames? I mean, it's in the background. It's not in the Zapruder, of course. You do have only one. You only have the one frame.
Yes, one frame. So I didn't do that, but I needed to verify the Daltex location because it was mentioned.
Sure.
But normally, this is something that I would not have presented. I refused when I started the research. I said, okay, I need to have different pictures, slightly different time, different location, different angle, position, and
really like creating a three-dimensional impression.
Exactly. If something is true, it's in one picture. If it's true, it got to be seen in other pictures, other film.
Yeah.
Okay. That's how I worked, and it proved correct, actually. Okay, next slide. I think we should be done with, that's a colored version of the shooter. I made that to make it easy because, as I said, the process picture is, quite hard to visualize if not used to the process. Okay, next slide. Okay, so this is a composite showing at this time the three assassins of JFK. Number one shows the guy. This is not the best version. This was just a recap. That's the Ukraine 2 on the left, okay, top left, and Daltex top right, okay. In the middle we have the guys from Moomin. And at the time I thought, okay, so this is it. I can go and tell people these are the three guys that shot Kennedy. But as I explained to you, now that I've seen the wounds, I have another opinion. I believe that must have been at least another shooter, more with a location more frontal, more horizontal than the shooter from the north. It's possible that that the ICA was right and the north shooter did miss. It's possible, actually. I came to that conclusion. Maybe they were right on that. Next slide. Okay, we'll see the end woods. Okay, great. Okay, so this is the original autopsy picture. Everybody knows that picture.
Yeah, but let me warn you that this is a fabricated photograph. JFK had the back of his head blown out.
Oh,
and then it was surgically increased in size to cover the whole one-third of his total skull. So this is the HSCA version.
Yep, absolutely.
Where he was actually hit below the external occipital protuberance up to the top. And also in the photograph, you don't actually see the entry wound.
Okay. You're right to mention it. This is the HCA version. And I believe, I don't know, but maybe I'm no specialist, so I could be wrong, but I don't think that any young student, anyone trying to apply for a Photoshop job showing this would be hard. This is ridiculous. I just can't understand that nobody has stood up to this day to say, okay, the hero is naked. This is not a real picture.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see the next slide. This is ridiculous.
I and others have pointed it out many times.
Okay. Here, just to... to stress what you just said. Okay, here I'm showing the evolution of this picture. Okay, on the left, you have the original autopsy picture, the HCR version, as you said. And you see the successive iteration, what happened to this artifact on the top of this ridiculous blob, I don't know. Okay, this is fake, this is not real, and as you see, this is washed out by the process. What you see when the image is processed is that there is a big hole. Well, it's not funny, but there is a big hole.
Fist-size blowout. Fist-size blowout.
Just like the witnesses said, it was, you can see it with your own eyes. Now, you remember probably you were puzzled, as I was, by the location of the ruler, which is not measuring anything. But now, in the process picture, you see that the ruler is measuring something. He's measuring the vertical length of the wound. Okay? So,
wow.
There you have it.
Wow.
Okay?
This is really fascinating.
So I just exchanged some email with the Douglas Horn, and I said, okay, you should be made aware of that, because you've done a tremendous work with the five volume set. Okay, I reread that 2 months ago, and say when I read that, okay, I knew, okay, this decided me to go public with the result. You know, I've been sitting on this result for 6, 7, 8, almost 10 years now. Okay, when I read.
Wow.
The Douglas Horn's book, I said, okay, no, it's not possible. If you believe in something, you do the right thing. So I didn't want to bother, okay, I will have to explain, we will have to discuss with debunkers. I was happy to have the intellectual solution. It was something important for me, but I didn't want to bother to go public and so forth. Okay, I've strolled the JFK forums, not for me. Definitely not for me. So, okay, but when I read the book, I said, okay, look at what this guy has done. Okay, you can't sleep on that. You can't sleep on the image that showed that Oswald was not in the sleeper's nest. It's not possible. Okay, so, okay, there you have it. The image is fake. It's proved. Now, we all long suspected that it was fake. Now we have the proof. It's fake. Next slide, if you want. Okay, this is a close-up of one of the version, just that we can really assert the shape and the magnitude of the wound. Okay, one thing I think is important. We can see what appears to be, could be fracture line, radiating from the wound. And when we will see the Z347, when we see, the head in profile, we will see that, we will see the wound is a volcanic shape, like a volcano. And maybe that the shape of Kennedy's head at the time those pictures were taken was slightly different. And maybe the fracture line that we see mean that maybe at some point in time there was a more massive deformation of the back of the head. We'll see it. We'll see that in Z-337 anyway. So and this could explain, in my opinion, some of the variation of between the witness, okay, at location or the size of the hand wound. I think there was some part of mobility, you know, in the wound, which may have rendered it difficult to be really precise on what you see if you see it at some moment or maybe later. Okay, that's just an opinion. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is a different version, but you see that the data content remain the same. And on the left, you have a 3D embossing effect. I just wanted to see what we could get from that. Okay, just show the shape, once again, very clearly the shape of the wound. It is lacerated, elongated. I don't I could have checked the length of the ruler for the wound, because I'm wondering whether the upper fragment would fit in that wound, but I believe it would. I believe maybe Dr. Mantic could answer that for us. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is Z-337. Okay, so I've rotated the image so that the analysis is easier. On the left is the MPI original image of an assassination, and on the right is a processed version. Disregard the entry indication, which is approximative and is actually wrong, because I will tell you where the exact entry wound can be seen in the Zapruder film. The intro, when you know where to look, can be seen in the original frame. I have made a composite that we'll show later on. Not of part of particular interest, I believe, is the exit wound in the processed image on the right. When you see what I just described as a volcano-shaped wound, you can see that there is a severe deformation of the back of Kennedy's hand, and just where I indicated the exit, okay, you see something like a donut shape, okay. You can see that there is a sort of a peak, and there is a hole inside, which is of course the hole that we just seen in the autopsy picture. Okay, this is quite blurry, I agree, but we'll see. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is, on the left we have Z-337, which is unrotated this time. I just wanted to compare with the newly found occipital wound that we've seen, okay? And I took as a reference point a flap of bone that we call the devil's ear, I believe, which is on the right side of the ear. Okay, it's indicated by the letter B on the processed ZZ-337 on the left. And we find the same spot indicated on the right. So you can see that the images are coherent. You'll find the volcano shape with a hole in Z-337. And you find a hole in the same place in the autopsy picture, after processing, of course. And we see that with the reference of the bone flap, okay, that actually they correspond. They are coherent. The two images correlate. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is 337 rotated as compared to back of the head picture only with emboss 3D. Okay, just the same exercise. Okay, do they correlate? Yes, they do. Okay, they show the same wound at the same location. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is once again the original.
Yeah, let me just say that this I regard as a fabricated photograph from Robert Groden's set. I do not believe this is an authentic photograph, but there may be features you can determine here that are important. So proceed.
Yep. Okay. Everybody has seen the original. That's fine. Just for record, we'll just proceed. We'll see the next.
Well, see, this is a, compare this with the HSCA photograph we were looking at, Christian. Mm-hmm. And look how short his hair was and clean. This is long and matted with a lot of gunk that appears to have been added to it, not to be authentic. When the Assassination Records Review Board deposed his ass, whether he had given the subject a haircut and a shampoo because of the difference between them being so great. And, of course, he said, no.
Actually, I processed this image in a set that was lost when I lost the hard disk. And all this, the top of the head, all the top of the head actually disappeared. The yellow, the red goo disappeared, the hair disappeared, and everything. Okay, but I lost the hard disk before going further, and I had to start again. And we'll see next slide. The new start was not bad after all. Okay, so this is, remember what we have just seen. Okay, this is the real deal. Once again, don't be focused on the how the image look. They look okay. Look at the data content. What you see in both image. You see just above the right eye an entry wound. I don't know.
It's white on the left and black on the right.
Exactly. Okay. It's exactly at the same spot that Kilduff, as we'll see, spontaneously pointed his finger during the press conference. And it's, if I recall, a spot which was designated as an entry spot by several witnesses. Okay, they are right. We can see the entry wound here. We can see a neat bullet hole and surrounded by a circular area bruised tissue, whatever. Might even be some shredded scalp hanging on the left. Could be, I'm not sure. But what we see clearly, this area, there is no scalp, no hair, nothing. This makes like the shape actually resemble what we see in the original picture. You know, you have a red incision and something, an area, a triangular area devoid of hair. Actually, it is this area which was painted over, simply, very simply. If I were a citizen, an American citizen, I'd be very, very angry at what we are looking at right now. This is contempt.
I was in Des Moines, Iowa, no, Dubuque, with Robert Groden. Mm-hmm. We had breakfast or lunch together. We were both speaking to an unusual high school class that had done mm-hmm. research on JFK. And mm-hmm. he offered to me that I could use his color photographs. And I turned to him and I said, but Robert, I said, they're fake. And he said nothing.
I believe he knows.
Well, of course he knows.
I believe he knows.
Christian, of course he knows.
Okay, this is not a secret. I'm sick when I always say the mystery of JFK. There is no mystery. There is no mystery. Everybody with a brain, you look at the fact, you do your homework. You know, there was a conspiracy to kill. There was a conspiracy to cover up. Okay, on the details after that, you may have disagreed, but this is clear as crystal water. Next slide, if you please. Okay, this is the same. Okay, we see the entry wound, and I wanted to compare to Kill the Jester because I think this is very important. This means that, what would be the odds that this is just by chance that Kilduff is pointing the exact location of the entry wound? I've been employed as director of research. I've done market research. I've done statistics, everything. I think it's very, very, very low.
Approximating zero.
Yeah. Even give you the, this way. No. This, and second point, for Kilduff to use this information, he must have received it from someone of authority.
Admiral Berkeley.
Okay. Yes, that's my guess. That's Berkeley. Berkeley refused to go on record when asked about the number of shots. As I recall, I said word to the effect that I wouldn't care to be quoted on that when asked about, oh, no, many shots. Okay. I think that, and we know that he tried to contact the IHCA, I believe.
Yes.
Saying, okay. We all know that.
And he declined to take his testimony. Unbelievable. The HSCA refused to take Admiral Berkeley's testimony.
You have to believe that. Indicates also is that definitely so the entry wound was known and seen in Dallas, period. Okay, so they knew that the shot that killed Kennedy was a frontal wound and it was seen in Dallas, as Kilduff shows and when compared to the picture we see now. Next slide, please. Okay, see, here we have on the right we have the processed right lateral autopsy now showing the entry wound. Okay. And now, okay, this is in unprocessed Z337. Okay, look, I don't know how it would look on a PowerPoint format, but just in the original 337, we actually see Kennedy's eye and nose profile. I don't know if you can see that. Just above the eye, you'll see a darkish triangular area, and that's which correspond to the entry wound now visible. I don't know if you see that because maybe you need to see it on a larger screen. But
no, I think I see it.
Okay, it appears like a triangular darker area. Okay, just above the right eye, and that corresponds exactly to what we see here, exactly to what the entry that is seen now in the process right lateral autopsy picture. Next slide. So when we know where to look, we see things. Okay, on the right is a processed version of Moman. Okay, you process Moman, you can see much more details than in the original, if I may say, a Moman. Here, what is interesting is that you can see the two flaps of bones that can be seen in Zapruder, okay, on the left. That's the process, the 337 on the left. You can see the two flap of bone. And I just wanted to correlate the occipital wound that we can see in the 337 with what can see been seen in Moorman. And in Moorman, actually, you might need to enlarge the process movement, but you can see the occipital defect. I don't know if you can see it right now on this scale, but you can see it. You see actually both flap of bones, the right one and the left one, and you see the occipital wound, or just where we find it in the back of the head picture, and just when we see it here. See how the skull is much more deformed in the Zapruder frame than what we see in the back of the head of the C picture. Okay, so once again, something which is objectively true will manifest itself. So if what we see here is true, we've got to find it in the movement, and you do find the both flaps. And I know that the flaps of bone have been disputed. Apparently, they seem to be genuine, which doesn't mean that they maybe have been enlarged somewhere in the Zapruder. This is possible. But as we can see in movement, there are actually two flaps of bone created by the headshot. And of course, we see the occipital wound. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is the upper fragment as compared to the occipital wound. Okay, just I thought maybe somebody with medical experience, expertise, could verify whether it would fit in, and I think it would, but I can't go further from that. No medical.
Well, I did a previous show with David Mandic about his new book, and we discussed this extensively: the location of the Harper fragment at the back of the head in the occipital area.
Okay, so I don't know. Of course, we must take into account the fact that maybe bone could have been ejected and scalp may have been kept. You know, so I don't know. We're not sure. We suppose, but we're not sure that the shape of the wound that we've seen here is the exact shape of the missing bone. It could be some uncertainty right here. But I'm quite sure that the upper fragment would fit in. There is enough marking on the bone, enough details to be checked. I mean, groove, vessels, groove, things like that. And I'm quite sure that Dr. Mantic would say, okay, it's possible that this location could be effectively the location where the upper fragment came from.
Yes, I think you'd like to look at my two-hour interview with him going through the medical evidence, his studies of the x-rays. I think it's highly complementary to your work.
Okay, next slide. Okay, evidence and forgery. Yeah, okay. All right, okay. First, let me say something. This is a subject that I avoided like the ultimate venereal disease. I just didn't want to tackle this. Just too much technicalities, moving lampposts, sprocket hole, bleeding, you name it. Okay, so I decided, okay, when I started the research, okay, well, I have no opinion. Could be true, could be untrue. Let's focus on other things. But of course, in the course of the research, I had to fall back on this question. Okay, was the record altered? Okay, we've seen enough thing already to know the answer to that. Yes, it has been altered, but we will see a specific example. So this is the Dillard FBI picture, the original. Notice the black arrow pointing across the snipper's nest to, we don't know, could be the box. So maybe the FBI wanted to charge the box with assassinating JFK. I don't know, but okay. It seems that the only thing of interest as indicated by the black arrow in this picture is this box. Okay. Let's see. Next slide, if you please. Okay. This is what actually the Dillard picture show. Okay. On the right of the picture, after processing, okay, you see, we'll see the image. We have seen this image, you remember, previously, in a composite of the snipper's nest.
So the arrow would be used to distract attention from the right to the left.
No, I think it's more subtle than that. I'll give you my explanation. Okay, so we see this guy, which is, once again, we can see, we'll see the shape of the dark heart. We can't see much of the clothing, but we know that the clothing is dark, so we can't see much of it. Okay, So this is one guy. I discovered this guy, like I said, in 2012. Okay. And once again, it was at the end of the presentation on the JFK assassination. Once again, doing things, I was saying, trying to tell, there are many things to do, and I tried trying to get people to help me. Okay, this is there are a lot of pictures to analyze. This is one of them, and just doing a few things. Oh, this guy just popped up. This is impossible. At this time, maybe I've just designed a process to fabricate image of DPD officers. Could be. This is not the case. Okay, so this guy show up. This is a DPD officer. It could be the shooter that we've seen previously. Could be one of the guys moving the box that we've seen were present in the sixth floor. Okay. Let's see another, this next slide, if you please. So that's one guy found in the Dillard picture. Okay. Okay. So it's the same, but there is a question mark. Okay. Where the black arrow of the FBI is pointing. Okay. If you got good visual skills, maybe you can detect something below the question mark. I don't know. I will not pretend that it's easy, because I found this out just 2 months ago, while I found the guy on the right, 3 years ago. Okay. Let's see the next slide. There is somebody else. Okay. That's a close up of the first guy. Just to make sure. Okay. But we can skip that. Okay. Now you see the black arrow, where the black arrow point is pointing. Okay. So you maybe don't see, it's not very clear now, but you see there is something. If you get good visual skills, you already know the answer. Who is this guy? Let's see another slide. Okay, that's bigger. Maybe you've got a better idea. Here I have indicated that the black arrow of the marked by the FBI. So what we see is the FBI, and I think that's very important. That's crucial, actually. The FBI guy, the guy from the FBI who analyzed the picture, actually pointed out to this guy. Why? I'll tell you what is my analysis. Because this guy was so obvious before being blacked out that the guy logically pointed to indicate there was two guys, not one. That's why there was no marking for this, and there was a marking for this guy.
Sure. Okay. We can't have two, or we have a conspiracy. It's only not a conspiracy if there's one and only one lone assassin.
You get it correct. So this guy was blacked out, and this guy also. What this show is that the job, the analyst that did a job, it's somewhere up in the chain of command that someone did. Okay. This is not convenient. But that tell you also something about the kind of conspiracy which is at play here, because leaving the black arrow, I don't know. If I had been a conspirator, no, I would, okay, let's redo the picture. So this was not an all encompassing conspiracy wing, like people try to say, just to say in conclusion, well, you know, it's impossible, but no, real conspiracy doesn't work like that. Okay. You have to control the flow of information. If you control the flow of information, you control the narrative, you control the truth. If it's not in the media, it's not true. If it's in the media, it is true. Okay? So tell you how it works, and it's interesting. Here with this picture, you have evidence. If I was an Oswald relative, I would make a case with that picture. We have evidence of forgery in an official federal government. That's the FBI guy doing that. Okay? Hiding information in a criminal case. About the killing of your 35th, I don't know, it's the
35th.
Okay. Okay. This is evidence of federal malfeasance in a criminal case. Yes. I think you can bring that to court.
Well, Hoover was using the FBI to cover it up. I mean, he was using the FBI to cover it up, not to solve the case, but to cover it up.
No way. But he was a participant. I believe Hoover's role was to sell to the public the Lundnut theory. Okay, the CIA role was to fabricate the Patsy, okay, then the fake third world war, you know, threat, which was used to blackmail people to go along with the official theory. But I think Hoover's role was to cover up. CIA has to fabricate a Patsy ready-made, you know, with a referral, with a legend, everything. Everybody, some other people gave money. It was a coalition. I go along with Peter Dean Scott on much of what he said about the JFK assassination. Actually, it's not something out of the. We did a systemic adjustment of the.
Peter Dale Scott talks about the deep politics of the assassination and how it was done by the national security state.
That's exactly my conclusion. It's a nexus, and you don't have to go looking for Corsican hitman, things like that. No. Here we have Dallas policeman. I believe in another city it was a different setup. I believe the Corsican hitman story probably relates to what was scheduled for Miami or some other or Chicago or whatever. Okay, I think it was a coalition and everybody had to participate and
I agree completely.
Okay, next slide. Okay, I believe it's a close up of the guy, the second guy, I believe.
Chance?
Sorry. Oh, yeah, okay. So this is a close up. Okay. Once again, you can make up your mind. Is this something, some optical illusions? No, it isn't. And, I believe the guy is actually moving box. The picture is blurry, but, you can see hand. You can see the square shape of the box. The guy is a little farther in the background as compared to the other guy. And he's probably building the wall of box, in the background. Okay. Next slide. Okay, this is the same. I have excised the background. Just 1 second, because I believe we can solve here a minor mystery. If you remember, what was his name? Ewins, young black, a schoolboy, 30 years old, who was a witness to what took place in the Snipers' Nest. And if you remember his testimony, he kept saying, this is very intriguing. He kept saying that the man he saw in the Snipers' Nest, he had a white spot on his head. He kept saying that. He had a white spot. I don't even remember this. Okay. That's a minor thing, but this is one of the things that, I love intellectual challenge so this has troubled me. And here you have the explanation. The first thing you have to ask yourself, it was Amos Ewins, right? Amos Ewins. First, you have to ask yourself what kind of a white spot on the head of somebody you could see from 6 floors down. Got to be some major white spot. And I think we have the answer here. Remember, all those guys are wearing Dallas police uniform. And here, we can see that the sunlight reflection on the metallic insignia in front of the cap. And I think that is what the Ewins saw.
Christian, we have only 3 minutes to cover the rest, so please.
Okay, next. Let's go. Okay, that's Powell, and we will solve. 3 minutes to solve a big mystery. Okay, no more mystery. Remember the Powell picture with the stack of box, which shouldn't be there because Oswald didn't have the time to build it. Okay, we know that. Okay, let's see the processed. Okay, this is what is the stack of box. This is a Dallas police officer in the Snipers' Nest. I think Powell is a few minutes, maybe 1 minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes after the shot. At this point, Officer Baker is finished his encounter with Oswald on the second floor. He's running, trying to get to the roof. He's nowhere near this area. Here we see that there is no stack of box, so there is no mystery of about how Oswald could have built it. He didn't build anything. There is a Dallas police officer standing right in the middle, well, actually slightly to the right of the window, and this is what was hidden. Somebody decided that it was not convenient to have this picture, and so they put a stack of box instead of this guy. Next slide, if you please. Okay, same different version, much more less evolved than the one we just seen, but look at the shape of the badge. It is clearly seen here below the question mark, and undisputedly this is a Dallas police uniform. Okay, next slide. Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, here, this is an intermediate result. What we see here, I'd like to see what the debunker will say about that. Okay, here we see the fake box, and inside we'll see the slowly appearing true image of the guy. Okay? if you wanted to demonstrate forgery, here you have it. Okay. You see how they managed to create this fake taco box. You see the shape of the box, of the taco box around the man's head. This is ridiculous. This
fascinating.
Is
ridiculous. Great this stuff.
That's contempt. It's contempt for the American people. How they would dare do that. It's incredible.
Christian, we're on our last minute. Quick.
Yeah, okay. Same. This is a clearer image of same, but you can still see with the image is clearer of the man, but you can still see the shape. Of
do the next. You already, you got the point. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, next. Okay. This is the next film, forgery in the next film. First thing. On the left, you have the original. Below the question mark in red, you see the right rectangular whitish area I was talking about in the next film. Okay, notice that. On the right, on the right, you have the process, and you see that rectangular area has disappeared. Sure. You see BDM3 here. Yep. Okay. Look also at the unnatural look of the tilt of the wall in the original picture and the discrepancy in vertical alignment with the dotted red line. Okay. What this means, this has been tilted, the wall, to create a fake perspective, probably because the forgery in hiding BDM3 here needed that.
Fantastic, Christian. I can't thank you enough. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guest from France, Christian Toussaint, for an absolutely brilliant and fascinating presentation. I thank him for being here and all of you for listening.
Goodbye, all. Thank you.